mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a wide-ranging discussion with Ohio Department of Agriculture Director Brian Baldridge about concerns ranging from the future of the family farm to lingering uncertainty over the lack of a farm bill and the potential impact of broad tariffs on the state's largest industry. Also this morning, To Your Health, they've successfully turned a classic song into an infectious jingle. But what does iZurvey do, and what condition does it treat? We'll take a closer look. And the Hancock County OSU Extension has advice on navigating the holidays without derailing your health and dietary goals. Jennifer Little will be here to tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, December 9th, 2024. College football is ready to enter the postseason in its first ever 12-team college football playoff bracket revealed yesterday. Top four seeds, no big surprise here, Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, and Arizona State gets a first round bye. That was a bit of a surprise that Arizona State got a first round bye, because they were, I think, one of the lowest ranked conference champions out there until Clemson upset SMU. So with that, that put Arizona State in the bye position. But anyway, those are the first round bye. Arizona State was picked to finish last in the Big 12, and they ended up winning it all. So Oregon, Georgia, Boise State, Arizona State have first round byes. Ohio State will host Tennessee in a first round matchup on December 21st. And by the way, that will be on ESPN/ABC, 8 p.m. in primetime December 21st, Ohio State, Tennessee. That should be a good one at the Shoe. And if the Buckeyes advance, they get past the Volunteers, they would then play Oregon in the Rose Bowl on January 1st. So kind of a traditional Rose Bowl matchup for potentially Oregon and Ohio State. If not the Buckeyes, it would be Oregon and Tennessee in the Rose Bowl on January 1st. But that would... So what do you think about the way it turned out? Alabama was out. Where the other ones? Miami was out. South Carolina came on strong at the end of the season. They did not make the cut. And who was the other one that was supposed to... Was it Ole Miss? Okay. Anyway, the 12-team playoff bracket was supposed to solve all of the arguments about teams that deserve to get in but didn't. And yet, you had still had arguments. And you knew it was going to happen. You're still going to have arguments over who should have been in and who shouldn't have been in. And, you know, you just moved that line down several spots. Instead of arguing over who should be the first out or the last in at number 4 versus 5, you're arguing, making the same argument versus number 12, number 13 on the list. So, never going to get away from it, but an interesting field, and the Buckeyes do have a plan, have a chance to redeem themselves after laying an egg against that team up north here a couple of weeks ago. So... we wish the Buckeyes best of luck. Should be a good one. Ohio State and Tennessee. But the big sports story this morning is, have you heard about this? Juan Soto, outfielder for the New York Yankees, or now formerly of the New York Yankees, headed across town to join the New York Mets in a deal that is sending shockwaves through all of baseball. Multiple reports say the star outfielder has agreed to a record-breaking 15-year, $765 million contract. $765 million. The Yankees were offering 15 years and $760 million, which opened the door for the Mets to slap on another $5 million and outbid them. So Juan Soto heading across town, but will stay in the Big Apple. He's 26 years old. The deal reportedly includes a player option after 5 years. The annual value of the contract could exceed $55 million a year. And The contract makes Juan Soto the highest paid athlete in the history of professional sports. The highest paid athlete in the history of professional sports. Now, Juan Soto is a great player, but the highest paid athlete in the history of professional sports? Really? Okay. You know, everybody's going to be talking about that, so it's going to be one of the big buzzworthy stories of the day that will be making headlines for sports fans. Other items here among the first things you need to know this morning as we get a new week started. You remember the story last week about Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield that has considering not paying for patient anesthesia when a patient's surgery ran beyond a certain set time limit. The surgery took too long. They weren't going to pay for anesthesia. They walked that back. But here's another Anthem-related story, Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield. Apparently, the OSU Wexner Medical Center may be dropped from the Anthem network at the start of the new year. The university health system and the insurance provider have until the end of this month to agree on a new contract. Officials at OSU say Anthem has continued to raise premiums for policyholders and employers, but has not adjusted the payout rates that they pay providers to adequately cover rising costs of care. Meanwhile, Anthem says Ohio State wants to increase their expected payments by 3 times the rate of inflation. So it's a big back and forth. See how it lands, but Wexner Medical Center could be out of the Anthem network at the start of 2025. So something to make note of if you are on Anthem's plan. Interesting. Let's see. Here's some good news. This may be the best news you hear this morning. And it comes from the University of Birmingham. And researchers have found, and this is great news as we come up on the holidays, researchers have found that drinking cocoa high in flavanols, could help reduce the impact of high-fat foods. So again, we're coming into the holidays. You're going to be eating things that maybe are not the best for you. You can offset that by drinking cocoa. Flavanols in cocoa could help counteract the negative effect of fatty foods and protect your body's blood vessels. Dr. Katarina Rendero says, we know that when people are stressed, they tend to gravitate toward high-fat foods. And of course, this time of year, with the holidays and everything, same thing. We wanted to see if adding a high flavanol food to the fatty meal would alleviate the negative impact of stress on the body. So, cocoa. How about that? Now, if you don't enjoy hot cocoa, other high flavanol options include green tea, black tea, berries, and apples. Well, I guess theoretically have the same effect, but nothing is better than a steaming cup of hot cocoa on a cold winter's night. And it's good for you, too. So there you go. I told you, it's the best news you're going to hear today. The best news. This is kind of interesting. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, college enrollment is down 5% among 18-year-olds this fall semester. According to the National Student Clearinghouse Research Center, the decline is higher in both public and private four-year colleges. Enrollment for African-American freshmen saw a drop of nearly 17%, 5% overall, 17% for new enrollees of color. Experts say there are a number of reasons for this, not the least of which is the cost of higher education, which is keeping students away, but also declining birth rates. There are just fewer students to begin with, a smaller pool, and then you've got people who just simply can't afford it. Interesting. And lastly here, among the first things that you need to know this morning, speaking of careers, The story about declining college rates. If you want to be a star, you don't have to go to college to be a celebrity, certainly. And this may be your big break. Dolly wants to make you famous. A casting search is on for the upcoming Dolly Parton Broadway musical, Dolly, an Original Musical. It's opening on Broadway. I'm not sure when. It's opening on Broadway soon. And Dolly announced the search for Dolly on her Instagram, saying she's looking for talented performers who can capture the spirit of her journey. Dolly, an Original Musical. It's her life story. And she says, anyone from experienced theater professionals to undiscovered gems are welcome to audition. So, who knows? Could be you. More information about the casting search can be found on dollymusical.com. Dollymusical.com. So there you go. You could be the next big Broadway discovery. How about that? Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started here.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, showers possible today with a high around 50, mostly cloudy tonight, a low around 40. Criminal charges are pending after authorities with a state agency raided a bar in Fostoria.
Agents from the Ohio Investigative Unit executed a search warrant at Smokehouse Bar. They say they found a complex illegal gambling operation, including the illegal sale of instant bingo tickets. The investigators plan to present their evidence to a Seneca County grand jury to have criminal charges filed.
WTOL 11's Jeff Smith reporting. Get more in the story on our website. It sounds like two facilities. It'll be a lot of fun for people. We'll be opening in Findlay next fall. Soar Adventure Park has announced that it's coming to Findlay. Soar says the Adventure Park will be located off of County Road 236 next to Ashley Furniture in the Timberstone Commons Shopping Center. Soar says its facility will feature trampolines, climbing walls, zip lines, airbags, slides, a ninja course, and a toddler area. According to their website, Soar Adventure Park is targeting a fall 2025 opening date. Learn more about the Adventure Park in the story on our website. Meantime, the Hero Day Action Park has announced that it still plans on opening a location in Findlay. On its Facebook page recently, Hero Day announced that its Findlay location would be opening in the fall of 2025 and that they would be announcing the location of the park very soon. Hero Day says their 20,000 square foot indoor action parks are designed to ignite the adventurer in all of us. Get more in the story on our website. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine has a big decision to make. Who will he select to fill the Senate seat vacated by J.D. Vance when he becomes vice president next month?
The list is long. The governor told the Cincinnati Inquirer he wants someone who can win primaries and general elections and work hard for Ohio. The choices include U.S. Representative Mike Carey, State Senator Matt Dolan, Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose, Ohio Treasurer Robert Sprague, and Committeewoman Jane Timken. The chosen successor will serve until a special election in November of 2026.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Now our cover story this morning. Last week, the director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture, Brian Baldridge, was in Findlay as the guest speaker at the Hancock County Republicans' First Friday Luncheon. And before that event, he dropped by our studio for a wide-ranging discussion about a number of issues of interest to the agriculture industry in Ohio, ranging from the future of the family farm to lingering uncertainty over the lack of a farm bill and the potential impact of broad tariffs on the state's largest industry. You have been on the job for, I guess, coming up on 2 years now. What is that like, being kind of the man in charge of the department that oversees what is the state of Ohio's largest industry?
Well, for me, it's just amazing. Agriculture has been part of my life throughout my life. So this is just an amazing opportunity. And appreciate Governor DeWine, Lieutenant Governor Husted giving me that opportunity to really stand behind, to support Ohio's number one industry, food and ag, $124 billion industry.
Yeah. For those, obviously, those in the industry know that. Others may not realize just how big this industry is, even in today's economy, where, you know, we hear so much about the expansion of tech and manufacturing and so on and so forth, that agriculture is still the number one industry. One of the things, though, that is kind of interesting with respect to that, we were talking a week or so ago, there was a report that came out from the Ohio Department of Development about a month or so ago, projecting that the population of the state of Ohio would be decreasing over the next generation, the next 20, 30 years. And obviously, with agriculture, this is a generational industry in many cases. What does the possibility, I mean, there are a lot of implications for a population loss, politically, economically, what does it mean for the future of the family farm?
Sure. And I think, you know, I think there's two sides of this conversation. As we look at agriculture in general, we know that the agricultural population has decreased. We know our farms have gotten
larger.
It's
already decreased.
Yeah, we know that. We've accepted that and realizing, you know, that the next generation is not always there. And the new generation coming into agriculture is not there. So our farmers, our farm families, our farm community continues to decrease from that standpoint. And you know, that's a concern for us because we like to be diversified and have that large family base of agricultural community. But as we look at our state, you know, I think and I hope there's been some great announcements, you know, as far as growth and development and industry and just what takes Ohio forward and what keeps, especially the next generation. You know, mm-hmm. we talk about a brain drain loss.
Right.
And I'm optimistic. I would challenge that research because of some really exciting things going in and on in Ohio that our future, that could change. And it's exciting. Glass half full.
along those same lines, there is always the conversation about balancing economic development and growth and the impact that has to existing farmland. They're not making any more farmland, and you know, there's got to be a striking a balance between, you know, developing for all of these other industries and yet maintaining sure. agriculture in the state of Ohio.
Yeah, and you know, I guess that's a great lead in as I go around the state and lift up and support and stand behind agriculture. You know, I talk about, you know, the 530 employees that serve the Department of Agriculture that support our industry and those 25 programs and those 10 buildings and those 5 laboratories at ODA. But from that standpoint, one of those is farmland preservation.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lifted that conversation to a higher level. Because you could have a room of 10, 20 people and say, define what farmland preservation means to you. Well, that's a program at ODA that buys easements to keep land in agriculture. But there's a bigger conversation to be had. And that's that balance of industry growth in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
residential growth, expansion from our urban cores out into rural Ohio. So it is a bit. And bring in energy generation to that topic
sure.
as well. So
right.
there's a huge plethora of conversations to be had about where Ohio goes from the agricultural community. Because to your point, there will come a day, you know, production's been great. Numbers have went down in agricultural land in Ohio. We know that in the last two decades, we've removed about 1 million acres
right.
of productive farmland
right.
out of Ohio. So And we've increased our yields. You know, technology has grown. I grew up, dad was a agronomist and a hybrid seed corn business down in Southern Ohio. So, you know, it was always striving to yield more, grow better, higher, you know, tolerance to droughts, higher disease resistance and so forth. And we've done that. We keep increasing our yields. But there will come a day that the world turns to the ag community and says, hey, you got to ramp it up.
Yeah.
Well, that ramp up means productive soils.
Yeah.
So we have to balance that, and we've put together a focus group at ODA, a lot of interested party folks and people would have great input to really focus on where are we going, where we've been mm-hmm. From a farmland standpoint in Ohio, where we're at, and where we're going.
Yeah.
And that ties in planning, local governments. We're a huge yeah. local control state. That's our townships, our cities, our villages, mm-hmm. our counties.
Yeah.
And as we have that local control, there also has to be that vision. You know, I was a past county commissioner in Southern Ohio, and I think back, I think, you know, we revisited our land use plan in 2008. And I'm sure if you go down in West Union, Ohio, into the commissioner's office, and you pull that book and that document out, mm-hmm. you got to blow off the dust.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you know, we have to visit this and look at this constantly with Ohio of where we're at and that challenge of productive farmland.
And we are certainly seeing it even here in our local community with the expansion of everything from alternative energy to manufacturing and warehousing and so on, even within our own county. Want to ask you, too, about a couple of issues in front of the agriculture industry on a national basis and how they impact Ohio. A lot of concern or a lot of people wondering, when are we going to get a new farm bill? It's already a year overdue. It was supposed to be passed last year, probably won't get done this year. So we're looking at maybe next year. What are the concerns with the future of the farm bill, especially with an incoming administration that is so focused on eliminating government spending? Because right. there's a lot of it in that farm bill.
There is. And, you know, we in the ag community, you know, it's called the farm bill. We know that there is a lot of important things for our agricultural community in that. Mm-hmm. But there is so much more right. in the farm bill, whether it's SNAP programs, feeding programs,
sure.
food needs, a lot of things in that bill.
A lot of farm safety net programs in that farm bill. That's one of those things that the president and some of his advisors have targeted in the past or looked very closely or said we need to look at very closely. How concerning is it that those might be under the gun?
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at the incoming administration, make sure that we as the ag community really carve out the topics within that farm bill that are our priorities. And mm-hmm. it goes back to telling the agricultural story. I tell folks one of probably the weaknesses, farmer myself, but sometimes we might go to the local coffee shop, brag about being the first one in the fields or having that first harvest or that right. excellent yield. And we tell those ag stories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those stories leave that coffee shop, and what do? The men and women who farm are going back home. They're going to their farm, and that story
kind of
stops.
Kind of preaching to the choir. Yeah. Kind of preaching to the choir. Yeah.
So that story stops. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we have to do, and a lot of great groups, whether it's Farm Bureau, our Corn and Wheat Association, our livestock, our beef, our dairy, you know, all our different commodities do a great job. But we have to continue to do that more. We have to look at those issues within that farm bill and make sure that we are educating. As a state legislator in the past, myself, you know, you have to, if those issues that maybe the folks that are serving in Congress aren't aware of, we have to lift up our voices and make sure that the agricultural story is told. And because somebody else is eating up that oxygen.
Yeah.
And maybe they're not being negative conversations toward agriculture, but they're talking on their issues, and that is consuming the oxygen.
A lack of realization as to just how important those programs are for American food production. On a similar topic, there have been some concerns expressed. I've read a number of articles from ag interests who are worried what broad tariffs would possibly mean for agriculture. You know, some of our biggest trading partners, places like Canada, Mexico, and so on, there will be ramifications from that.
Yeah, and as we look at where we're at right now, and you know, the ag community is feeling the pressures. You know, we talk about droughts in different parts of our state this year, but the biggest issue, you know, really is the down economy in our commodity prices mm-hmm. From a grain side of it. And that's a huge concern. We know we have a lot of inventory. We know that trade is a top priority as we move forward. And that trade conversation along with tariffs all comes into play. And where do we go in the future? And again, it goes back to making sure that we are voicing our concerns and our needs to address some of these issues, to make sure that our farmers, you know, the large amount of inventory we have in grains is pushing our price down. We need to get those trade agreements in place and navigate through that to support the Ohio farmer and the American farmer as well.
Do you think there can be carve-outs for agriculture trade that might be exempt from those tariffs?
I think everything's on the table as we have these discussions. Where will we go from here? And that falls back to that voice making sure that it's being heard. And again, going back to that, our commodities, our Farm Bureau, those advocacy groups, and if you're part of that out here listening, lift up that group and realize that they're our voice, as many of us are. You know, I think, Beck, you were talking about the Farm Bill, and we had a policy. NASDA is our National Association of Departments of Ag. So we're really engaged from that standpoint. But we had a policy conference in D.C. and a few months ago, and I said, you know, I'm going to go to D.C., and I'm going to talk a little louder and a little more often about how important this Farm Bill is. And the only thing I came home with was a little bit of laryngitis. So
it will be really interesting to see where all of this goes moving forward, but just demonstrates the fact that these issues that we're talking about on the national scale that involve international trade and all of these things actually do trickle down to your neighbors who are farmers in the state of Ohio and in Hancock County, Ohio.
100%, yes.
Again, Brian Baldridge is director of the Ohio Department of Agriculture with us this morning. Brian, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So we have all heard the commercials for iZurvey with their catchy jingle, right? Play off of the classic hit song Lowrider by War.
iZurvey gets GA going slower.
Yeah, there it is. A friend of mine actually joked that that commercial has forever ruined that song for him, but that is a different discussion. The commercials are everywhere, and they certainly are infectious. Yes, indeed. It is an earworm, no doubt. But it actually got us to wondering, what exactly is iZurvey, and what condition is it used for? Well, as it turns out, it is a treatment for an advanced form of age-related macular degeneration. And to your health this morning, we are joined by distinguished ophthalmologist and retinal health specialist, Dr. Priya Vakharia. Dr. Vakharia, what is geographic atrophy, and what are some of the signs that someone may have this condition?
Great question. So geographic atrophy, as you said, is a form of advanced dry macular degeneration. And the best analogy I can give you is imagine that you have a backyard full of grass. That's your retina. The retina is the most important part of the eye. And, you know, you have this grass that's growing back there. It's healthy. And as you get older, it just becomes a little bit less healthy. That's dry macular degeneration. So the same analogy as your retina is just a little bit less healthy over time. But geographic atrophy is where you develop bald spots. You know, so imagine your lawn gets a big bald spot where the grass stops growing and it can get larger over time. Same thing happens in the retina where you get a patch or an area where the retina stops working and it can get larger over time and it's permanent. And unfortunately, if it gets so large that it affects the center of your vision, you can totally lose your vision from it. And so really important to kind of draw attention to this disease. The symptoms of early geographic atrophy can be as nonspecific as just general decreased vision, maybe difficulty reading, difficulty with reading in certain lighting or having contrast between colors, having some distortions. But obviously the advanced form is typically where a patient just can't see any more centrally.
Yeah. So are there risk factors associated with this?
One of the biggest risk factors is family history. It doesn't mean that this is only going to happen if you have a family member with macular degeneration, but certainly if you have a family member who has it, it's going to increase your risk. And then aging, that's one of the biggest risk factors, is this can affect all of us as we get older. Other risk factors include smoking or cardiovascular disease or obesity. So those are modifiable risk factors. But for the most part, this happens to most patients for absolutely no fault of their own. It just happens as they get older.
So how common is this?
You know, I see this all the time. I am a retina specialist. These patients get referred to me, so I see a lot of macular degeneration. But probably most patients out there don't even realize that they have it. You know, estimates are that probably 70% of geographic atrophy patients are out there and not aware that they have an issue. So again, really important, if you're out there and you haven't had an eye exam recently, please just go get an eye exam just to screen for general eye-related issues.
So is this something that can be picked up in a screening, or is it something that a patient has to, because, you know, obviously nobody can get into your head and see through your eyes to see what you are seeing or not seeing. So are there signs that can be picked up in a screening, or are you relying on the patient to explain, you know, what's going on and reveal some of those symptoms?
Absolutely. Just a routine eye exam with an eye care provider will detect macular degeneration and will detect geographic atrophy. So just getting your yearly dilated eye exam is the most important thing.
So the patient doesn't have to necessarily recognize the symptoms. You can detect this in a regular eye exam. Now, that kind of brings us, as we mentioned, to iZirvey. It's been, you know, advertised all over the place. We're familiar with the catchy jingle, you know, and all of that. So what does iZirvey do, and how does this help those with GA?
So iZirvey is one of the treatments that's now FDA approved for the treatment of GA, which is huge, because if we had this conversation 2 years ago, I would have said there are no treatments available for GA. But now we have treatments available, and I'm here on behalf of Astellas to talk about iZirvey. iZirvey is an intravitreal injection, meaning that it's an injection given directly into the eye by a retina specialist every month. And by getting monthly injections, it slows progression of GA by 18 to 35%. So certainly doesn't stop it, but does slow progression. There are risks to the medication, and so it's important to highlight that anytime you get a needle in the eye, there is a risk of infection or retinal detachment, and there are risks of the medication in general, such as increasing the risk of wet macular degeneration or having a transient elevation in your eye pressure. But again, this is one of the treatments for GA, and really incredible because we've never had treatments for this condition before.
So, and again, it doesn't stop it. It doesn't reverse it, but it does slow the progression. So given that fact, what other advice can you offer those who are dealing with this condition?
I think the best piece of advice is talk to your retina specialist about whether you're a candidate for this therapy. You know, not everyone is a candidate for treatment, but talk to them about it and see if it's something that you're interested in. And then the other piece of advice that I have for anyone listening, again, just get your eye exams in general to screen for any eye-related conditions. And like all, you know, specialists, I always recommend a healthy diet, healthy lifestyle. You know, certainly that's helpful for the eye as well.
You know, it is so we always say that it's important to get your screening because the earlier you catch things, the better the outcomes. But especially with things that are progressive and irreversible, such as this, it makes it even more important to get those early diagnoses. Again, Dr. Priya Vakharia with us this morning, talking about geographic atrophy and the iZirvey treatment for that. Where do folks get more information?
Folks can go to the website, which is iZirvey.com, and they can learn more about iZirvey and learn about geographic atrophy.
I can hear the jingle in my head right now, even as we speak. Dr. Vakharia, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
In the broken news this morning, we begin in the state of Florida. Always something weird going on in the state of Florida, and this time at Jacksonville, specifically the Jacksonville Zoo, where an escaped warthog is to blame for canceling last night's holiday light show. the Jacksonville Zoo is like many zoos across the country. Toledo Zoo does the lights before Christmas, and they do similar thing. Columbus Zoo, and you know, zoos all over the place. It's become kind of a tradition for zoos to do, you know, holiday light shows. Well, officials at the Jacksonville Zoo say a warthog got loose from its enclosure during the Colors of the Wild holiday show, and so visitors were told first to shelter in place and then had to be evacuated. The zoo was closed for the evening as a precaution to make sure that none of the visitors startled the warthog. they weren't so much concerned about the warthog, you know, injuring visitors, anything like that, but you wanted to make sure the visitors didn't startle the warthog. Maybe you just wanted to see the lights. You just wanted to take a tour of the zoo, see the lights. I don't know. I think they've got the warthog back where he belongs now, and so the festival can continue through the rest of the season, but little added excitement that the zoo visitors were not necessarily counting on last night. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, the odd and unusual side of the headlines, Nigel Richards. Congratulations, Nigel Richards. He recently won the 2024 Spanish Language Scrabble World Championship. Here's the kicker, though. He doesn't speak Spanish. Well, that's pretty impressive. I mean, it's impressive enough to win the Scrabble World Championship, but to win the Spanish Language Scrabble World Championship when you don't speak Spanish, it's even more impressive. Apparently, this is not the first time he's pulled off something like this. Back in 2015, Mr. Richards won the French language championship despite not knowing French. he has been dubbed, Mr. Richards has, the Tiger Woods of Scrabble. won the title in Granada, Spain. Says he simply memorizes words. He doesn't have to know their meaning. Which I guess is true. Because, you know, they don't ask you for context in Scrabble. You just have to know the words. So he memorizes the words without learning their meaning. Although, you would think if you memorized an entire language, it wouldn't be that much of a leap to learn their meaning and learn how to speak the language, but he has no interest in speaking the language. He just wants to win the Scrabble championships. One person who has seen Mr. Richards play says he can look at a page and retain the entire thing. They got an eidetic memory. It just kind of sticks like a photograph. So he is quite the Scrabble savant, apparently. That's wild. You win the Spanish language Scrabble championship, world championship, without knowing the language. Pretty impressive. Let's see here. Here's a traffic story, and it's a kind of a holiday themed. In Omaha, thousands of people are commenting. Apparently, this has gone viral now on social media. A post about a muscle car pulled over by Omaha police, completely decorated with Christmas lights. Some people decorate their homes. Apparently, this person decorated their car. The car was pulled over. It turns out the driver had a revoked license. So you would think if you were going to deck out your car for the holidays, you'd make sure that, I mean, it's kind of odd to call attention to yourself if you are driving on a revoked license, but apparently this guy was. not the brightest. His car might have been the brightest on the road, but he's not the brightest driver, apparently. This individual was cited for driving without a valid license. And he actually was issued three other citations for improper vehicle lights. You're not really allowed to drive around with Christmas lights all over your car. It can be distracting for other drivers. Police say the car was impounded, but a photo taken by the Douglas County Sheriff's Department posted on the Omaha Scanner Facebook page has gone viral. You would think that if you were driving on a revoked license, you wouldn't want to call attention to yourself, but this guy did. And finally, it's kind of a light day for the broken news, but quality over quantity today. How about this? Speaking of traffic fun, 76-year-old Betta Khoury has a bit of a conundrum, a constant stream of traffic tickets. You see, now, Betta Khoury lives in Long Island, and she's been retired, and she hasn't actually driven. She's 76 years old. She hasn't driven for 4 years. She gave up the keys 4 years ago, and yet she still gets these traffic tickets. She will go to her mailbox, and she'll get a traffic ticket for speeding or for running a red light or whatever. Several other infringements like that. In New York, they have, you know, the cameras at traffic lights and the speed cameras, and they can cite you. Now, in Ohio, they can't do that, but in other states, including New York, they can. So why is it that she keeps getting these citations in the mail? Obviously by mistake, because she hasn't driven for 4 years. Well, at first she couldn't figure it out, but now they think they have come up with an answer. It's because the license plate of her last car, which she gave up in 2020, but her license plate number was NCC1701. And if you are a Star Trek fan, you know that was the registration number of the Starship Enterprise, NCC-1701. The real culprits, it turns out the real culprits, are using novelty license plates that people put on their cars, you know, with that, you know, Star Trek fans, you buy the novelty license plates with NCC-1701. And these novelty plates that anyone can buy online and stick on their car along with their actual plates get picked up by the cameras because that was her actual plate number. She gets the citations in the mail. And she said they come from all over, not just New York. She once got a phone call from Ohio, a police chief there looking for plates because they were involved in a robbery, actually, and caught on camera. Says every time they run the plate, NCC-1701, it comes back to me. So the whole country has my name and address for tickets that I don't owe, for citations that I don't owe, I'm not responsible for. As for how all of this can stop, the New York Department of Motor Vehicles tells CBS News that illegal novelty plates are handled by individual law enforcement entities. So there may be no way. I mean, every law enforcement agency across the country would have to enforce these novelty plates, get them off the road, make them illegal and get them off the road. Turns out that navigating the American bureaucracy is the real final frontier. That's wild. That is wild. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
WFIN and Lorette Chevrolet Cadillac salute the men and women who are spending this holiday season away from home.
Hi, my name is Sergeant Butler. I'm currently deployed in Southeast Poland. I just want to give a special shout out to my family, my friends, and especially my wife, Rachel. I love you all.
Best holiday wishes from Lorette Chevrolet Cadillac, WFIN, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. A new survey of 2,000 single Americans found that one-third plan to get frisky over the holiday season. Half of those who will be going home for the holidays plan to get it on in their childhood bedroom. Oh boy. 41% of singles in the survey tend to hook up just as often, if not more, during the holiday season compared to other times of the year, although 14% say New Year's Eve is actually the best day of the season for romance. Just like in a Hallmark movie, some old flames will be rekindled this holiday. Nearly a third, 29% specifically, plan to hear from an ex this holiday season, which maybe not coincidentally is the same percentage who have hooked up with someone during the holidays and then regretted it later. Even more, 42% of those in the survey have experienced a breakup during the holidays, and half of those respondents regret the relationship that led to said breakup. And maybe that's why 39%, even though 39% of those in the survey will be going home for the holidays, twice as many of those will attend holiday gatherings solo rather than with a date, 44% to 21%. Some of the key reasons: they want to enjoy the holiday gatherings on their own. They only want to bring serious people to the gatherings, a serious relationship to the gatherings. And they want to avoid the awkwardness that comes with bringing a date around. Jennifer Little is here from the Hancock County OSU Extension, Family and Consumer Sciences educator. We're talking this morning advice on navigating the holidays without derailing your health and dietary goals, which is always a challenge. Kind of interesting. I saw this on the Newswire piece, said the average American wants to lose 29 pounds.
Oh.
That's not necessarily during the holidays or, you know, is just overall. Right. 29 pounds is the goal. 81% say that they would like to drop those pounds ASAP, wouldn't we all?
Yeah.
But 79%, and this is a good thing, 79% understand that weight loss is an ongoing process.
Right.
For all of the talk that has been so much in the news this year, especially about these miracle drugs, these GLP-1s.
Yes, yes.
We, again, and we've always looked for that, you know, miracle cure-all, that magic bullet. But at the end of the day, it's the same advice that it's always been.
Even with the miracle medications,
yeah,
they still say diet and exercise is still part of that. And
yeah,
so that is one thing that we want to remember. And especially over the holidays, we're talking about, you know, diet, what we're eating, what we're consuming. And part of it is just being mindful, just thinking about it, being conscious of it. There's a lot of stress and busyness over the holidays,
sure,
but trying to be thinking about where we're at, what we're doing,
yeah,
and what we're putting in our bodies. We recently did a program for our Diabetes Month Awareness, and I was having a conversation with my colleague, and we just talked about taking in the five senses. You know, we think about the holidays and we immediately go to the food part.
Mm-hmm.
But when we think about it, you know, we can have a full experience of the holidays using all of our five senses. Just thinking about the sights of the season. People spend hours and weeks decorating, and we have so many beautiful decorations, just your own tree in your own home. All of the lovely zoo lights and downtown lights and storefronts, you know, taking in things, that part of the season too. You know, even just the holiday outfits. I put on a holiday shirt today. but enjoying the holidays beyond just the food. So thinking about the sights, you know, taking it in with our sights.
Doesn't have to be all about the food is what you're
saying.
Right,
right. I think that's one of the things that kind of, again, kind of derail us when we get focused on just the food part of the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Other things as we think about is the smells. You know, think about, of course, all of the good smelling of things baking, but also the scented candles, the pine. People that have, I don't have a fresh tree in my house, but there are those that do.
Yeah.
And we have some great tree lots in town, but just taking in the scents and those sorts of things. And also just thinking about the feel of things, the velvet, the, you know, all of the textures that are this holiday season, the pine, the decorations.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a part of being mindful of where we're at. And the other thing that is so, so important is the people. You know, when we think about the holidays, we hearken back to previous celebrations with mm-hmm. ones that we loved. We, you know, people, I have a brother who still sends out Christmas cards every year, and he puts a lot of thought into them. And so taking time to be present with the people, that's one of the phrases that I said was, you know, connect over conversation instead of fraternizing over food. You know, being present with the people and absent from the food table. So we think about the holiday gatherings, taking time to spend time with those people. There are times There are people, we were just talking about the Thanksgiving, there are people that I see at Thanksgiving that only see once a year.
Mm-hmm.
So taking time to be present with the people as well. And again, that's those relationships are really what, you know, what get us through a lot of life, you know, so making sure that we're maintaining those relationships as well over the holidays.
So all of that being said, you are not saying that we shouldn't enjoy the, you know, the tastes and the treats of the holiday season.
Yes, yes. And I will definitely say, I think that it's important to, food is part of those traditions, you know.
Because denying yourself is not going to work.
Right. Yeah. When we say, you know, usually starving yourself.
Yeah.
For a holiday party later, usually backfires. You end up eating more than you normally would. So mm-hmm. we usually say, don't starve yourself and then overindulge later.
Yeah.
It's a good idea to enjoy things that we love in smaller portions. And if we're baking things, it's a good idea to bake those things that are our favorite things, but make sure that they don't all stay in our cupboard. Make sure that we're giving them away or sharing them with friends and family, because we're empty nesters, and I know when I'm baking some of those things that make 3 or 6 dozen, I don't need 6 dozen cookies at my house.
Right.
But someone, my neighbors, my friends, someone down the street, someone at the firehouse is going to enjoy those.
That's a good point. It doesn't have to be, sending the baked goods and the treats home with family necessarily after the holiday, even your neighbors or, other people in the community.
Yeah. I just heard of a story the other day of someone who every year bakes things and takes it to first responders. They'll take it down to the firehouse, take it to the police station.
Stuff.
Those people are working 24/7 and they deserve that. So the other thing is, we can do some things making seasonal foods in a healthier manner. So we can certainly cut back some of those recipes. We can cut back along the sugar without changing the overall quality of a food. We can cut down along the fat or substitute other things.
Yeah.
But some of those favorite beloved family recipes, you don't necessarily want to mess with those. It's better to just enjoy those in smaller quantities. I would say, use those, those little holiday plates that are fancy. Don't buy the big, 12, 13 inch, holiday plate for your gatherings. Buy the little appetizer plates. Stick with that.
That sounds almost gimmicky, but it does work.
It actually does work. There's been a lot smaller put into plate. That when it comes to encouraging people just to eat with a smaller plate.
You get a bigger plate, you're going to fill it up.
Exactly.
That's what we do.
And thinking about things that you can have that are kind of free foods, like those raw vegetables. So there are lots of wonderful pictures and ideas about ways you can take a vegetable tray and make it look very festive. You can decorate it as a Christmas tree. You can make it in an ornament. You can get out those fancy holiday plates and put some healthier food options on them. Little meat and cheese trays, having a little bit of protein, not just always going with the sweets, having some vegetables and fruits, not just, again, always going with the sweet, rich things.
Mm-hmm.
Try and have some of those alternatives balance, when you're going to a party, making sure that you're indulging in some of the healthier options and balancing that off with some of the sweeter, richer options.
So bottom line, what I'm hearing you say is that everything in moderation. And again, it's a familiar refrain, but it really is good advice.
And the other thing I would say is indulge all your senses, not just indulging our tastes, but indulging ourselves in other ways. You can enjoy those sights and sounds. They're all calorie free. Get out there and enjoy some of the, we talk about the changing in the weather, find some outdoor activity that you might enjoy. And continue to
stay inactive.
Stay inactive. That's the other part of it, that physical activity part of it. That's one of the things that really kind of hurts us in the winter, is we eating a little bit more and exercising a little bit less. But take in the zoo lights, take in the downtown stroll. They have all kinds of wonderful things going on, and taking advantage of those opportunities here in the community and beyond.
It all counts. And being mindful of, being mindful of how much we are taking in and how much, talk about everything in moderation. We got to be mindful. Not to give people one more thing to think about during the holiday season.
Right. But enjoy. Being present with the people, being present with where we're at. Staying a little farther away from that food table sometimes.
You can do this.
Yes.
And Jennifer Little with us from the Hancock County OSU Extension. We have a link for more information at our webpage. And Jennifer, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us. You have a Merry Christmas, Chris.
You too. And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. And that, of course, is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow morning on the program, I'll tell you about a scholarship program designed to ensure the cost of education does not stand in the way of dreams for families affected by childhood cancer. Just a terrific story. Plus, we have details on this year's local Wreaths Across America effort. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.